Hello all, I am Andreas Kufris. I'm here to talk about my image processing extension, which was inspired by VIPS and which is some other image processing package written in POC and for GNOME and things like that. But what I use Create is now for Tickl, so it is different in the internals. And I'm using critical and code generation for it. And this is actually my second talk. The first talk, which was the introduction, was last year in Bologna. And this talk is online as PDF, zip file, as the lecture cast. And you can either, depending on how you use this talk, you can either click on the link or copy out the link basically from the page to see that. This is where all the background on the package is, so I won't go into that basic. This is not a repeat of a previous talk. I was light on internals in the last talk, and today I plan to do a bit deeper look into the internals. That said, you won't see the C code. Most of it is generated anyway, and with that, I mentioned last year that it was demand-driven with lazy construction, basically that the pixels are not computed immediately, only when needed. And today we go into the data structures used for that, the definition structures and the runtime structures. Another thing I mentioned was that it is based on horizontally threaded execution, basically multi-threaded concurrent processing of various areas of the image to be faster in getting the result. And today we will then talk about how these threads are, what threads there are, and how they talk to each other to accomplish things. And the last topic is then a bit of a talk about benchmarking the thing and the performance of the thing. And regarding benchmarking and performance, the main ideas to look into are the loop unrolling and SIMD vectorization. There are lots of CPUs which have vector instructions now, short vector instructions. This is a bit of a forward looking part. And regarding the lazy construction, I already said when we create images, we actually create, we don't compute the pixels immediately. We are creating various structures to record how the image operations are come together. In the simplest case, this is a pipe operation X, and then the next one after the other to generate the result. Or you have multiple inputs, then in the simple case, it is a tree. And in the extreme case, you have a directed acyclic graph where basically multiple inputs and various operations happen and merge into each other in many branches. And then you have the second step where you actually get the pixels. That is called image materialization. And for that, we have also structures, the run structures, which are derived from the definition structures. And the run structures are also what is then goes into the threaded part, because each thread, each worker thread, will have a separate copy of the run structures, whereas the definition structures are only a single copy. They are static and everybody can access them. They are read only to the threads. And as I said, in the materialization, you create the structures, then you compute the pixels or other results you may want, and after that, well, other results, as I said, statistics, for example, and in the end, you tear the structures down again, but only the run structures, the definition structures, are still present and ready for another round of pixel computation, statistic computation, whatever. And as examples for materialization is basically computing the pixels and saving them to another file, an image file, or into some channel to communicate elsewhere. And the other big thing is whole image statistics, like get me the maximum value for all pixels in the image as one of the more primitive things. And before we go to the structures themselves, the extension has quite a bit of internal inspection, like with Tickle we have the info command and so on, and here in Active we have format as D2 markdown Tickle script. And for example, when you say as Tickle script and you give it an image pipeline, it basically iterates over the internal structures and returns them to you as a nice Tickle script to see what it is actually doing internally. And the markdown is pretty much the same, except you get a markdown table. And D2, I believe yesterday, who was it, the storyboard thing, mentioned also D2, that's a diagramming language, similar to Graphis Dot or Graphis Nito, except more powerful. And if I can create a D2 diagram of that and then run it through the diagrammer, and you get something like this, which shows you the whole pipeline graphically. In this case, on the right, you have the image reader, and on the left, you have the result, basically, and you see here a deck. You have two branches where things are computed, and when they merge together, doing some post-processing. The data flows from the green to the orange, from the left to the right. This is exactly the inverse of how pointers are internally, because here we have the arrows from the source of pixels to the consumers, and internally, it is the consumers who know their sources, which provide the pixels to them, basically. And if we then go focus a bit, in this case, here on the top right branch, we have then two operations, basically extending the view on the image, and then after that, we do a tile max with a radius, and here we have the arrows already in pointer direction. And you might have noticed from the titles, I am out of a preface. I am talking about the definition structures actually already. And what we have here is basically a type like optilemax or opview. We have parameters for them, radius, port. These have both parameters, not all operations have them. So this is an optional thing. So, and then you have, of course, more information. Basically, the sources I already mentioned, and each image comes with the geometry, which is the domain, and state information. This is information you usually derive from the parameters. And also, I should note, you need parameter definitions in the type itself. And most of else of the type is function vectors like compute the pixels, for example. And put it a bit together. The parameters, sources, and so on, that is what describes the content of the image, whereas the type defines how to generate that context. And beyond that, you can also attach metadata to each operation that is not visible here in the graphics yet. This is basically a Tickle obj, and you have some operations to manage it as a dictionary, and you can put in information like the color space, the image was in, and stuff like that. And of course, you want to ref count things so that you can share the image structure, many variables, procedure arguments, and so on, and it knows all the time it knows when it can release basically things and when it should not. And going a bit deeper, we basically have now the parameter structures are separate from the content and meta structure, and of course the type is also via a pointer in a separate structure. This in an object-oriented system, the type is essentially the class, and we have only one type structure, and we can have many operation structures referring to it. And an interesting thing is, given that metadata is a TickleObj pointer, if you create a new operation and you pull in the metadata from one of the sources, you simply copy the pointer, update the reference count. However, here in this view, the content is part of it, and when you do an operation which changes the metadata, what do you do with the content information? Because either, yeah, you have lots of pointer stuff in there, and if you simply copy them, you might have to ref count all of them. And this is actually solved a bit differently. Basically, the content information is put also in a separate structure, like the metadata as a Hickel object, and only this content structure is then ref counted and not all the other things. And that then looks like this. You have your operation with your metadata and your content. The content is ref counted. Inside of that, you have your parameter sources and so on. And the parameters are again operator specific. Because of that, they will be actually a void pointer internally, and only the various functions know the actual type and how to access it. And the content information is also a separate block in the whole, the parameters and so on is a separate block inside the content, because this is the information we want to have. We want the fetch function and all that to know about, and everything else, like the ref count, the type, the metadata, is something they should not know about. So it is this structure and the pointer to that structure which is handed to the functions to do things. And here we also see that now the pointers to the source operations is in the detached structure. And when we go then into the C level, we have it basic. This is basically the same thing. I'm just inserting the type names without the active underscore prefix. So we have the image for the operation, we have the image content for the detached stuff, ref counted, and the image info is what the procedures, the function vectors get told about. And with that, we can go to the runtime structures, which roughly parallel the definition structures. They also have state, but that is when runtime state, per thread state. They have their own sources in parallel to the image sources. They have a result buffer for the pixels or other results you're providing. And of course, they are referencing the image structure to have all the other information, like the parameters, types, and so on. And if we put that into structures again, you have the region structure, which is basically the result buffer and the references to image and type. If you looked here, image and type, we could have the type via the image, and we are putting it into the region structure again as a copy, so that we don't have to pointer chase 3-4 levels, whatever, and have it directly in access. And similar, the region info is when is again the structure we want the function vectors to know about. So they have the runtime state sources, they have their copy of a parameter pointer domain, and also access to the definition state read only. So you can have their common stuff which every thread needs and shouldn't compute but on its own over and over again. And what you also have is the context, which is a hash table which maps from images to the region. Basically, we have most complex thing is a directed acyclic graph. And if you naively iterate through things, you actually get a tree of runtime structures, and that can be a bad thing because of combinatorial explosion. Let's say you have read from a file and you put a multiplier operation on top of it to multiply the image with itself, and then you do that several times, let's say 4 times, and if you naively go and you have a tree, then you have 16 operations to read from the file, 8 to combine them, 4 to combine that, and so on. So you have lots of nodes which are, yeah, combinatorial explosion of things, and that is something we don't really want. And the context helps us to prevent that. When we create a region, we check in the context if we already have a region for this image we are currently operating on, and if yes, we simply return that instead of creating a new one. And in this way, the runtime structures model of the same directed acyclic graph as the definition structures. And this then looks pretty similar to the definition structures, as you see. You have your region info with the sources, and you have a pointer to the parameters. You have a context pointer, pointer to image and type, state and image state. And you have a block that is the result buffer, where the pixels go. So basically pixel block. And this is what you use most of the time, except there's one niggling unnice thing. In the example I made with a combinatorial explosion with multiplication, that is one of the easiest cases, because when you make a request on an operation for a specific region, the operation looks, and checks, did I compute this region before? If yes, it simply returns the result buffer. And it's basically shortcutting. Instead of having to read from the file 16 times, it reads once and then serves things out of a result buffer. That is a problem the moment you have operations which actually do not use the same region but are actually different regions. For example, if you do a matrix multiplication on the thing for itself, in one branch you pull the row and it's in the pixel buffer, and in the other one you pull from the column, and you see it's not the same region, okay, so we fetch it again, we write into the pixel buffer, and now we have overwritten the thing from the first one. And whatever we get out of a matrix multiplication is not such a thing. On the other side, the moment if we create blocks, result buffers for all the possibilities immediately, then we still have this combinatorial explosion, just not in the operation structures, but in the result buffer structures. And in this case, the system is optimistic. It begins with a single result buffer, and only when it detects a conflict, then it allocates additional result buffers to resolve a conflict. And it has basically this array of blocks. The array itself is relatively small, so it is of pre-allocated for the maximum possibilities, but we have only a single buffer in there, and on conflict we add additional buffers. And to this end, we actually have to tell the calling, the consuming operator, that the result buffer is now in a different location, and that is what we have the slots here for. Basically, the producer goes into the consumer and modifies the slot information to tell it, here's your result buffer, it's not your standard location. And in this way, it goes optimistically with minimal buffers, and only where it actually has conflicts, it de-optimizes. And because of this limited de-optimization, it keeps the memory for the result buffers under control, and not basically in the explosion we wanted to avoid. Good, that is what I want to say about the various structures, and the next topic is then the horizontally threaded execution, which basically means we are operating on an image in concurrently with multiple worker threads, each of which processes a single region, which is also why the runtime structures are called region and region info. For example, one region could be a single row, and then we have to generate tasks, provide the pixel for this row, that row, and the other. And so this is the first thing the system has to do, generate tasks. For that we have a thread, and then we have threads to process each task, each region, and generate the results. And at the end, we need another thread to collect the results and put them together into the final thing. And in the terminology of the active internals, the thread generating the task is the maker. Then the more than one or more workers process them, and the results are collected by the completer. And We have at least, well, we can actually go unthreaded or with a single worker, but at that point the overhead is that we should not bother with it, so we will have at least two workers. And we also have to handle how many CPUs we have. For example, my system at home is a Ryzen something something. It's a quad core, four physical CPUs, but it has hyper-threading, so it has eight virtual CPUs. And so I basically have space for one maker, one completer, and six workers. And what I also want to say in the workers is that the runtime structures are created, used, torn down. I believe I mentioned that before already. And for things to talk to each other, how do we coordinate these threads? So, and we have currently two methods in active. One is unordered processing, and the other is sequential processing. The main difference is if you have an operation where it does not matter in which order the results from the workers come into the completer, then you can use unordered coordination. And for an operation where the order absolutely matters, you use a sequential. Something unordered is, for example, the whole image statistics, the MUX. You basically create tasks, and each worker computes the row maximum, and the completer collects the row maxima and returns then the image maximum. And it does not matter in which order the row results come in. The MUX is a commutative operation, so it does not matter if you have the MUX first or in the middle or whatever. Sequential is, for example, when you get pixels and you write them to a file where you cannot see, where you cannot compute the position of a row in the file and seek to it. That is basically every file format which has some kind of row compression or other things where the size of a row is variable and not fixed. A counterexample is the binary PPM, for example. Each pixel is a byte or three bytes, so a row has a fixed size and we can seek exactly to where each row is. So for binary PPM, we can use unordered. However, for something like PNG or JPEG, all sequential is basically the order of the day. And unordered is when the coordination is as simple as before. We have two queues, FIFOs. The maker basically busily generates tasks, puts them into the queue. Each worker basically is in a loop, pulls a task, processes it, pushes the result to the result queue, and so on until an EOF signal comes from the maker. The completer simply pulls results, puts them together until everything is done, and the EOF signal arrives in the completer as well. The speed of the system is here governed by the completer. Basically, if the completer falls behind in pulling results from the queue fills up. The workers cannot stuff their results in, block on that. They don't pull tasks from the task queue, so the maker blocks them as well until basically something is pulled from the results. Then the next worker pushes results, gets a new task, and so on. Because of that, we actually want the completer to be as simple as possible, which is often the case. Like again, my image maximum. You pull the maximum, the partial result, and then put it together to the timer or something.
Yeah, that's time to conclude. Yeah.
Oh, a pity. Okay. Then I will go to sequential. This is a more complex. You pull from idle. You have task queues for every worker, and you put your information about which worker got the task into the pickup queue, and the completer then knows where to pull the next result from, and the others can still continue. Good. Then I go to benchmarking. I will skip about that. I have a null sync, which simply pulls things and discards it, and I have a null sequential sync, which does the same but uses sequential, so I can compare the two possibilities. I also have then between unthreaded and extremely overcommitted CPU with 16 lockers basically. And if you have results, but you see the 17 possibilities pretty nice as maps, as blocks in the graph, and it looks as if sequential and unordered are pretty much the same, but that is actually not true. The moment you use unordered as your baseline, you see that sequential is actually, the moment you overcommit the CPU, basically you see that there is a definite overhead in that one. And if you don't overcommit the CPU, sequential can be roughly on par actually with unordered, which was a surprise actually. And as I said at the beginning, performance was through multi-threading, and to gain more, we have to make the workers themselves faster. And I mentioned already we can do loop unrolling because most of the CPUs are out of order. And we can look into short vector instructions synth, where we have a problem that we have lots of different instruction sets. And typically, I want to be portable and not create something for each instruction set. And what I found was Google Highway, which is basically a wrapper all around all these instruction sets, a length agnostic, and this is what I did my experiment with. So on the loop unrolling, what you see here is the arc cosinus operation, and the unrolling has no real effect, which is basically because it is a complex function which is in the standard lib, and it is not inlined, so it is a function call, and you don't get speed up because of unrolling. And if you use a shift operation, then you actually see the effect that the four unrolled thing is definitely faster than non-unrolled. On this side, it says speed. It's actually inverse speed, namely nanoseconds per value. So smaller is better, and the blue one is the four unrolled, green is two unrolled, and that is the baseline without unrolling. So you see that there is definitely some advantage to loop unrolling. And this is what I will go forward in the future with. And this is now basically loop unrolling versus highway. And we actually have, at the bottom, the blue one, that is the four unrolled one. And it is actually better than highway. And, okay. I'm not sure, but I'm on the correct one. Yeah, okay. Highway was actually not as good as for unrolling the loop, because on my CPU and the instruction set I have, the vector is actually only two elements long. I'm processing doubles, and even the higher AVX stuff has only two doubles in a vector, so the highway is actually at best two unrolled, and the four unrolled is then already better than that. And there are more benchmarks basically in the Fossil repository. There's a README from which you can actually get all much more examples of the benchmarks and the SVG files, the plots. And I still. Wieso ist das? Ah, sorry. That is apparently something left over. And yeah, it might be that this was a slightly older version of the slides, because I distinctly remember in my printout that that was a different chart. Sorry about that. Good. Questions?
Andreas Kupiec.
I have two small questions. I mean, if you're talking about threads, are you talking about tickle threads?
Or no, this is system threads.
Yeah.
So.
And the second thing is, I mean, it's more or less quite similar like this MapReduce model from Google. But MapReduce is over multiple different machines.
Yeah.
And you have a MapReduce here internally. But I mean, it's altogether, it's a very generic structure and not really restricted to vector operations. How generic is your code? Or is it possible to make it generic, to use it also for other kind of parallelization for computation?
Yeah, the internal structures are all coded towards vectors of double values, because that is my internal representation for an image. Regardless of if the image comes in from PPM, PNG, whatever, with bytes and or shorts or whatever, it is converted to doubles, and that is what I have. So the structure is not for anything like string processing or stuff like that. That being said, that is also an interesting idea to possibly look into to distribute things across multiple machines. But it is a low-level thing. So from the view of a ticker script, the system should still look like a single machine, and even if things are distributed across multiple. And I'm not sure at what size things will be good for distribution across multiple machines, because the moment you have multiple machines, you also have copying data back and forth, basically. Or at least to the machines, if the results are statistics, then you have only small stuff coming back.
I mean, there's a very small example from the basic method used. If you have a sequential search, you have a list of, let's say, 50 megabyte rows, and if you parallelize this, the sequentials of the search can be quite fast, because you have all of the smaller pieces are very short.
Yeah.
That means it is scaling up with the problem size.
Yeah. Good.
Andreas Kopiers, we